Welcome to The Cockatoo, your source for all things Australian music in the US of A. We're coming at you from Hollywood, California, traditionally Tongva and Chumash country, and this is the interview part of our newsletter where we get into musical journeys to the United States. Today I'm very happy to be talking to Zoe Randall, who, with Steve Hassett, make up the folk duo Luluke. Zoe and Steve grew up in Victoria, Australia, but met in Edinburgh, Scotland in 1999. It wasn't until 2008 that they released their debut album as Luluke. Between now and then, they have released 5 studio albums, moving between Australia and Brooklyn. They've signed to Sub Pop, shared stages and studios with American folk rock and rock royalty, and participated in some uniquely American traditions, such as playing NPR's Tiny Desk and covering the Grateful Dead. So let's find out more about how this musical journey has gone down. Welcome, Zoe.
Thank you.
Great to have you on the Cockatoo interview. Let's start by orienting our listeners a little bit about Luluke. As I said in the introduction, you guys met in 1999. And tell us a little bit about that period between, just sort of quickly, between 1999 and then putting out your first album in 2008.
Well, Steve and I both went traveling in 1999 after leaving our first bands. We were both fed up, and I decided very seriously to quit music, even though I hadn't been doing it for that long. And but when we met, we actually... I guess the quickest way to say it is that we sang together, and both of us were completely gobsmacked by the harmonic blend. We'd been hanging out and I started playing an idea that I'd been writing, and Steve started harmonising to it, and yeah, it sounded incredible. But we then went back to Australia and did all manner of other things. Both went to university, worked different jobs, and it wasn't until, you know, quite a few years later that we decided that actually we should turn our attention to music. And the big kind of caveat for that, especially for me, was that my father passed away. And after a year or so, I was pretty miserable. I was studying full-time, working, and Steve just suggested one day, how about we just piss off overseas and, you know, work on music for a while. So that's what we did.
When do you peg that time that Luluke actually started as a band, after 1999 and before 2008?
Probably 2008. Yeah, 2007, 2008. That's when we sort of put our first album together.
2008 first album. When do you move to the US?
Well, when Steve suggested we go overseas for a little while and focus on music, that was, I think that was 2005. And that's kind of when we went to New York for 3 months and then to Malta for 3 months. And I think that's when I kind of really got my songwriting process together.
So this journey in 2005, you said New York and Malta. How did you choose those two places?
Well, New York was always, in my mind, creatively, imaginatively, New York has always been a big figure. I think because I listened to a lot of Simon and Garfunkel records as a kid, as a really young kid, and Paul Simon as well. So New York has always played in my mind, even though I grew up actually in the country. I moved to Melbourne as a teenager, but I grew up in Ewbottypottypong, which is near Benalla, northeast Victoria. That's Ewbottypottypong for anyone who didn't catch it. I guess it was a big draw for me on a creative level to go to New York because it was so sort of storied in my imagination. And then Malta, Steve is actually half Maltese. His mum is from there. So it was a really good contrast actually, because in New York it was so hectic and so much going on that we didn't do a lot of writing work. But by the time we got to Malta, there's not a lot going on in this, you know, compared to New York. So it was really easy to kind of really focus and just be with nature and swim a lot and, yeah, get inspired.
Excellent. So bit of a world trip, loop around the globe in 2005 with New York and Malta. When did you permanently move to the United States?
In 2010. So we put out Dear Hamlin, and then as we were starting to work on Passerby, our second album, we started trying to record it in Australia, but it didn't quite, we couldn't quite find the right way to express the songs. There was really, we really labored over it, and then we decided to go to New York and see what we could do there. And we rented a house off some musicians that we knew there, and and we ended up making the record in New York.
So what do you think it was about New York versus Australia at that time that helped you with your writing?
What's become clear, I guess, over the course of the last 10 sort of to 15 years is that travel and being away from your home environment and what's familiar to you is a very good way to deconstruct your preconceptions about things, even your own ideas and your own sense of what's possible for who you are as a person and where how you can grow. Travel and being away from all that's familiar really opens that up. And I find that very helpful.
And in that time from 2010 to the release of Passerby, you guys were signed by Sub Pop.
Yeah, so we subletted from a guy called Matt Beninga, who's the lead singer from The National, which people might know. And he lived upstairs in a two-story house, and downstairs lived Aaron, his bandmate and producer of their records. And they had a studio at the back. And when we actually subletted from Matt, we met him through a friend, and he heard we were coming back to New York, and he was about to move to LA for a while. So he said, "Do you want to sublet my place?" And he actually said, "You should work with Aaron on your new record, you know." And by this stage, we'd sort of pretty well written the record and needed to start recording. And we sort of said to Matt, no, we produce our own records, we don't need a producer." And which was very cute, because yeah, it takes a long time to meet the right musicians and all that stuff. And anyway, it turned out that Aaron heard our music, and he said, we got along with him really well. And after a little while, he said, "You guys, we should do some recording in my studio." And so it all kind of came about very naturally. And of course, anytime we needed a player for a part, Aaron, had his Rolodex of amazing musicians that New York is filled with. And yeah, so we ended up making Passerby in their studio at the back in Brooklyn.
Tell us, how have you managed logistically, practically, these trips across the Pacific with regard to housing and just continuity of life? How do you go about it?
That's a good question. It's very challenging. You have to be very creative. I guess for years in Brooklyn and Manhattan, we did sublets. So, a lot of people sublet their apartments in New York, so that's quite easy. And then in Australia, we've sort of, well, now we rent a place down on the coast because we really need a bit more stability than we've had previously. But in the past, we've stayed with my aunt in Fitzroy. She's been very generous and, let us roll in and roll out for a few months every year. So yeah, it's sort of, yeah, we just have we've basically kind of have to make it up as we go along each year. But in the last couple of years before the pandemic, we got really fed up with that because it is really exhausting, as you can imagine. We have an area in Brooklyn, Ditmas Park, which is where we lived with Aaron Dessner from the National guys. So, and my cousin actually has a house in that neighborhood as well. Now he lives back in Australia, but he had a fallen down garage out the back. And after the National guys moved out of that neighborhood, we said to my cousin, "Any chance we could fix up your fallen down garage and work in it?" And he was happy for us to do that. So that's what we did a couple of years before the pandemic, and we've been working out of there ever since.
Throughout your careers, you've ended up working with some really amazing American musicians and, deep into the musical scene. Tell us how you went about that networking and becoming part of the fabric of the American folk rock scene.
Yeah, it's not very deliberately. It all happened very, I guess, we've got a couple of really good friends in New York, and most of them we met very early on. One of them is a film producer, and he knew the National guys, and he actually showed us their music, and I heard it, and I thought I didn't actually I hadn't heard it before, and I said, "Oh, I think they'd probably get what we do." And sure enough, he introduced us to Matt. He brought Matt along to a farewell drinks we were having for one of our trips home, and Matt came along, and we hit it off really quickly. So I think I guess they were just fortuitous meetings. Fortuitous in the sense that, we've met lots of amazing musicians, but when you have a connection with people, same thing with Aaron. When we met him, our connection was very immediate. And even actually the idea of working with a producer was something we really weren't going there for. Wasn't something we thought we'd do. But when we connected so well with Aaron, and we started, I guess, working in the studio with him, it became pretty apparent that he had something that he could really offer to our sound. And And he really enjoyed it. You know, we'd finished all the songs, so it was a different. I think sometimes when producers come on, they're very involved. You know, even in the creation and writing of the songs. But we'd written and recorded all of my bed tracks. So Aaron came in and layered ideas. And yeah, so it just worked really well, and we were very happy because we were very, very reticent to get anyone else involved.
Are there seminal moments that you recall where you felt part of the US/American music scene?
It's a strange thing. I think when you go to a country that where English is, you know, this, you know, dominant language, you sort of expect things to be the same, but they're really not. It is a very different culture. But at the same time, those differences, once you sort of get adjusted to them, I've sort of always felt musically and imaginatively very much like just a part of the globe, if that makes sense. Music's so fantastic because it can be from anywhere, and you can connect with the human or the ideas behind it. Like, I mean, growing up in New Potipotpon on a farm, you know, and listening to Simon and Garfunkel records, and they're talking about New York and city streets and touring around America, those ideas were completely relatable, even though I'd never been there. So I've always felt pretty at ease travelling and being in different countries. The hardest adjustment, probably for me more than Steve, was just that in Australia it's very difficult to talk about what you're doing in positive terms. There's a real inclination to kind of talk things down and, you know, not one-up yourself or something like that, especially in the country where I'm from. It's just not done. Whereas in America, if you meet people and you don't sort of talk very forwardly about what's happening in a confident way, they really quickly tune out because they're too busy, you know. So thankfully, Steve's pretty happy to talk confidently about what we do, and I just stay quiet in the background.
It's great cultural advice for people. Are there any memories that you want to share about your experience in the US that have been, I guess, wow moments for you creatively and personally in your experience on this side of the Pacific?
There's been a lot of pretty fun adventures.
Give us a couple of or a handful of your favourites.
I mean, playing clubs, you know, sort of dirty clubs, I guess, like Pianos and Arlene's Grocery and kind of being in that area that's really storied in my... I mean, I used to listen to a lot of Ramones. I still listen to a lot of Ramones. So kind of kicking around those neighbourhoods and being, you know, going over that kind of stomping ground and playing gigs to audiences in those in a city like New York is really, it's pretty fun. A special night was when we played the Lincoln Center. They do American Songbook. And so they invited us to do that, which is pretty a huge honour because,
absolutely,
you know, yeah, to be considered in that. Framework is lovely. A really big highlight happened just last year. At the end of the year, we played 7 nights with Dinosaur Jr. at the Music Hall of Williamsburg, which is an amazing venue and probably our favourite room in New York. And I grew up on Dinosaur Jr. records, and we're really close with Jay. We've toured with him a lot. He's taken us out on every record. I'd say he's probably the sort of single biggest advocate in that. I guess that's not, advocate's not a very romantic word, but you know, he's really put his weight behind us and taken us out on every record that we've been in America for. So to play with Dino at the Music Hall of Williamsburg for 7 nights was amazing, and it was for the 30th anniversary of Where You Been, which is my favorite Dino album. So yeah, we just did that in December, and it was amazing. You think in New York in a sold out room, a Dinosaur Jr. crowd, that it's going to be, you know, it could have been anything, but they were dead quiet from the first line to the last. And it was amazing. We had a really great time.
Incredible. Would have been quite an experience at a very legendary New York venue for sure. Heritage aside, just professionally, do you guys consider yourself an Australian band, American band, a Trans-Pacific band? How do you feel about yourselves in that sense as of 2024?
I mean, I still definitely, you know, think of myself as Australian, and I don't feel like an American citizen or anything like that. Like, I haven't sort of made that change, although we have been there for more of the last 15 years than we've been in Australia, much more. We've both always felt that what we could do musically was broad and open, so that it didn't need to be, we didn't need to be here or anywhere in particular. But we really like the idea of being able to reach, you know, bigger audiences that are available there, you know, and not having to be like in Australia, if you're a big name, you kind of have to be really famous, and I don't really like that side of it. In America, you can sort of, you can be successful, but you don't have to be a household name. And yeah, I prefer that.
If you could go back to that time in 2008, even maybe 2005, when you first started your adventures out of Australia and musically connecting into the United States, what advice would you give yourself?
Well, it's tricky, right? Hindsight, because if you, I mean, if I advise myself on some of the things that I know now, then I wouldn't have learnt them. But exercise is a really good thing, and I do, I have always sort of done that as part of my practice, but I probably could have upped it, get some muscle work in there. I think partly when you work on your own and it's creative work, you know, you, it's hard. It's not easy work. I mean, I enjoy it, but it's challenging. I really like how exercise helps manage your mental energy and anxieties, because it's like physical energy that builds up in your body, and if you sort of let it out in a exercise form, then my head is much clearer. Yeah, I've always done it as part of my work, but I would say just up it a bit.
Little bit more.
Yeah.
Well, there we go. That's great advice. Don't forget to do a little exercise every now and then. It's good for the heart and soul.
African dance. I could, yeah, I recommend African dance.
Yeah, all right. Good recommendation. Well, it's an incredible story because you guys really have been able to cross the Pacific and become a band that exists and connects and creates just as much in the United States as you do in Australia. And it's not easy to do. It's an incredibly physically long distance to go. It's a great inspiration for those who want to hold on to both realities. So thank you very much for talking to us today, Zoe.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks so much, Adam.
We've been talking to Zoe Randall. She is one half of Luluk, who are a truly trans-Pacific Australian folk band who are deep into the Brooklyn, New York scene, as well as being semi-residents of the Mornington Peninsula. You have been listening to The Cockatoo. This is the interview part of our newsletter. We are the Australian Music Alliance, which sits under the Pitch Hiker Foundation, a 501c3. So please feel free to support us in any way that you support nonprofits. But in particular, tune in, listen to these stories, share it with your friends and family, and we will catch you on an upcoming edition.